And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we're going to talk to Ann Garrison. Her article in Counterpunch, Stop Trump Fundamentalists Can Bite Me. So we're going to speak now to the unbitten Ann Garrison. Are you there, Ann?
Yes, I am. I feel.
You're in the clear and unbitten, right? I mean, you have stood up faced the demon.
I have, yes.
What is he? That actually is, as Jill Stein knows very well, is the mountain she's supposed to climb is the mountain of fear. So what was tell us about this convention. You're there. What people are saying and what just give us a picture of what the convention was like.
Well, it was really exciting. The people were absolutely wonderful. I had a great time. If you could have any faith in reason and humanity, you would think that this would be possible, that Jill Stein could be elected. Mm-hmm. Some of us came out of there actually saying, okay, I have to believe that this is possible. Until November, I just have to believe that it's possible.
Mm-hmm. You've pointed out she is on the ballot in, is it 47 states?
Probably in 46.
46.
The ballot access barriers are really high. In Pennsylvania, they knocked them down to 5,000 from something really high, maybe 20,000. Mm-hmm. But then they collected 25,000 signatures anyway, so she'll be sure to be on the ballot in Pennsylvania. After you collect all these signatures, you turn them in most cases, to the Secretary of State, who goes over each signature and invalidates some number of them because they don't look exactly like the signature on the voter registration or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she's on track. Let's see, there are, I think, 36 states where all of the paper has been submitted.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest are in process.
She
did not manage to get on the ballot.
Uh-huh.
North Carolina has extraordinarily high barriers. It's like 40,000 signatures or so. She didn't get on in Indiana, but she'll be a write-in candidate there. Mm-hmm. And she'll be an official write-in candidate, which means that ballots will be counted. If you go vote for your cat or your cousin, mm-hmm. nobody counts the vote.
Yeah. You know,
but she will be on in quite enough states to win.
It is very tough, as you point out. You have to credit the previous work of the Green Party, which has, over the years, fought against the duopoly, the two-party system, and has established, a beachhead, you might say. Because actually, in my view, knowing American history, that's a pretty large number of states to be on the ballot. Since they're very adroit at keeping people off. My memory is, and I wasn't there, but Abraham Lincoln wasn't actually on the ballot in the slave states. But he managed to win.
some people sometimes say that the Greens aren't serious because they're only on the ballot in, say, 23 states. That means there are 23 states where it's secure, and we don't mm-hmm. have to go back and keep trying to get ballot access again.
Mm-hmm.
But in many states, you can collect all these signatures, get on the ballot, and then if you don't get some percentage of the vote,
mm-hmm.
you have to do it all over again next time.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some static on the line here.
I think we're okay. Occasionally it is
okay.
A warble. I know that we have very patient listeners, and they understand the
okay.
significance of this Green Party event, because attending you, there was. I was struck by the caliber and the importance of the people who came there to speak and were supporting and are supporting Jill Stein. I noticed that Julian Assange. That's given all that's going on with Hillary's emails and the chicanery around Libya, etc. Mr. Assange is a major figure, and of course Cornel West spoke there, and you have this. Quite remarkable individual who's the vice presidential candidate, Ajamu Baraka.
Baraka. He's a Black Agenda Report editor, and yes, he was absolutely wonderful. I'm going to learn more about him. I've started reading all of his blog on the Black Agenda Report, which anyone else can do too. Just go to Black Agenda Report and search for Ajamu Baraka's blog.
And of course, there's this phenomena that the Bernie Sanders thing, whatever it was, has left a lot of wonderful people who really liked the concept, fighting for the poor, and fighting against the banks, fighting for universal education and paid and for Medicare system,
single payer health care.
Yeah, single payer
Medicare for all.
They are standing. They're looking in the window at the Green Party and thinking, "Okay, did you meet some of them, or what kind of things did you hear?"
Well, I ran around with a microphone for KPFT one evening and asked people how they came to be there, and at least half of them told me that they had been involved in the Bernie campaign, and they were there because they couldn't support Hillary, or because it became so clear that the DNC had made sure that Hillary would win the nomination.
I think, and I get your opinion on this, Bernie himself has helped by becoming so blatant in his abandonment, not just to the people, but the principles. Most of the people who got behind him were behind those principles. He said, this is not about me, this is all of us. And then he says, apparently in a New York Times op-ed piece, Hillary's continuing our revolution. I don't suppose that people found that very funny.
That's just inexcusable. Bruce Dixon talked about that a bit. I attended a workshop with Bruce Dixon, one of the Black Agenda Report editors, and then I produced an interview with him that we played on KPFT, and it was about plans to restructure the Green Party to make it a mass party whose leaders are responsive to its base. And he said it had to become a dues-paying organization, with membership being defined by the contribution of either money or time, like, you know, $15 a month. In Georgia, they were going to charge $15 a month because it needs staff to do outreach. And he gave Bernie Sanders as an example of a leader who was not responsive to his base.
Yes.
Because he just endorsed Hillary and just totally capitulated.
And
despite all of the pleas, in fact, like Bernie really walked out. I agree with what Chris Hedges wrote, that Bernie walked out on his one great historical moment after all that had been done to him in the primary to sabotage his campaign. He could have justifiably stood up and say, I'm walking out to join the Green Party or run as an independent, and his delegates would have gone with him.
Or he could have said, I'm just simply going to not participate, given what they did to me.
Yes, yes.
He would have had perfect reason. He could, even if he were to just sit down and say, I'm not going to flatter anybody with claiming this was an honest process or that she stands for my principles. How could he?
Well, he could have had the nerve that Ted Cruz had. Yeah. Went to the Republican convention and did not endorse Donald Trump in his speech.
Absolutely. I'm shocked and embarrassed at myself to say, you're right, Ted Cruz had more guts. He was willing to walk. He felt, okay, I'm going to walk the plank because I did believe in what I wanted, and I don't believe in what this guy wants.
Well,
and
he always
Bernie
said
the same
that he
choice.
Would. He said from the beginning, to be allowed into the race, it seemed almost like he had to say, I will endorse whoever wins the Democratic nomination. He said that from the very beginning, and it was then the main question that the corporate press wanted to ask him throughout the primaries.
Yes.
Are you going to endorse the Democratic nominee? Will you endorse Hillary? Nobody ever asked Hillary if she would endorse Bernie.
Because I assume the understanding was negative in the opposite direction. That, you know, are you kidding?
Or it just wasn't a relevant question. yeah. because it was assumed from the very beginning that Hillary was going to be the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you something about one winning strategy that Jill has emphasized a lot, and that is she says there are 42 million students graduates trapped in predatory student debt,
yes.
and that number is large enough to win the election. And she wants to abolish student debt. The corporate press asks her, how can you afford that? How are you going to do that? And she says, just like we bailed out the banks.
Mm-hmm.
The students aren't as deep into it as the banks were, and we're going to bail them out in the same way.
And they represent a productive future if you don't put chains on them. And
absolutely. Yes, that you said, for every dollar you put in, society gets back.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you that people are applauding this as I speak, but because we have been privatized and beaten up and mugged in this system. And by the way, when Bernie touched on that, you could hear a ripple in the room. And the same is true on anti-war issues, by the way. I notice in talks I've seen by Jill Stein and at the conventions, whatnot, if she touches on foreign policy and no more wars, putting a stop to all these foreign adventures that the U.S. is engaged in, and Hillary's commander-in-chief on this going way back, the crowds always respond spontaneously with fervor.
Oh, at the very beginning, when she came out, before she began to speak, everybody was on their feet chanting, no more wars, no more wars.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a group of Bernie delegates who kept chanting that during the Democratic convention, whenever they got these various military and security people up there to warmonger.
Indeed. Many people have remarked on that a four-star, I guess he's retired, general, was shaking his fist and talking about destroying people.
Joe Biden was talking like that. Joe Biden was saying, we're the best people in the world.
Yeah.
The finish line belongs to us. Come on, support our veterans. It was just appalling. As John Oliver pointed out, the Democratic convention was more jingoistic, patriotic, pseudo-patriotic than the Republican convention.
Yes, and indeed they're proud of that. And by the way, isn't this the second time around on this particular exercise? I recall Kerry coming out and saluting and saying, I'm ready to serve, flip-flopping his own history as one who'd served in Vietnam and was against the war. He shows up at the convention saluting and wanting to run on his record of having killed Vietnamese.
Yes.
It didn't work out, by the way. It didn't. He didn't win.
Hey, let me tell you something that will really warm your heart, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful speaker there. She was a leader of the Bernie or Bust movement, and she gave two knockout speeches the night before and a keynote at the convention. And in her convention speech, she started talking about Rwanda.
Well,
I'm not kidding you.
Uh-huh.
All of the other foreign policy talk was about the Middle East, but she was talking about U.S. aggression abroad, and she said, they're not going to tell you what they did to Rwanda.
Oh, boy.
I thought, well,
yeah, I do have a warmer heart now.
Yes. And then she touched on Iraq and Haiti, and she was saying, all those people in these other parts of the world, they're my brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned Rwanda several times.
Well, it's so
vital.
It's so
vital. Black Agenda Report.
Yeah, it's so vital. Well, you know, it's Black Agenda Report that's done the work, and of course you have. It is a simple, demonstrable fact that millions died as a result of that policy of taking over first Rwanda, but then the Congo, where they are still dying by thousands, and the Clintons are all quite proud of themselves. They all embrace the principal figure, Paul Kagame. So if of course I'm not surprised. I think, by the way, Jill Stein appeals to those people who understand about regime change and what it does to the people of places like Libya and Ivory Coast, Rwanda, Congo, all that stuff about regime change, it leads to massive loss of life.
Well, I'll tell you, the statement that brought down the House for the statement that brought down the House for Jill more than anything else was when she said, "We say to Donald Trump, we don't need no friggin' wall. We just have to stop invading other countries."
It's a great line. By the way, Jill Stein is a very capable. I'm very struck by her. What they call sound bites, but also the way she goes after points when she says, "Why should you not?" You know, what was wrong with the Bernie phenomenon? She said, "You cannot make a political revolution in a counter-revolutionary party." To me, that was brilliant. I mean, it's solved the whole question about, you know, associating with the progressives in the Liberal Party and waiting for something nice to happen when it never does.
Yeah, and I just remembered, before I forget, I want to spell the name of the woman who gave this great convention speech. Mm-hmm. It's nobody's quite sure how to pronounce it. So most people are saying Indigo. It's capital YAH, capital N, E with an X, accent aigu, and then capital NDGO.
Mm-hmm.
Yanengo, looks like. Most of the speeches, if they're not online already, they will be.
Yeah, isn't it great, by the way, that you've attended a convention, which, and we all know the history of third-party-ism, is it tends to, they're rather nondescript, don't get, you know, have trouble getting them their message out. The Green Party seems to be doing very well in the message department.
Well, yeah, and it's in part the Bernie moment, and Jill credits Bernie. She always, in her speeches, thanks Bernie for creating this moment.
Mm-hmm. It could have been his, but now it's hers.
It could have been his, but now it's hers. And
we're with hers. By the way, this is Ann Garrison. A delightful article, The Counterpunch. Stop Trump Fundamentalists Can Bite Me.
Bite me.
B-I-T-E, not Biden.
I mean, there has been...
It's a subjective and clear argument. You're tired of being put upon by these nibbling characters who are terrified for their lives. Their own, by the way. Not anybody else's. Their own.
Yeah. And they'll say, you know, their headlines like, "Repeat after me, a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Donald Trump." And then we never get to talk about what Donald Trump actually says.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he's crazy, whether he means it, whatever, he says that the Cold War is obsolete. We don't have reason to be provoking Russia by lining missiles up on its border and sending troops there.
Mm-hmm.
He's opposed to the TPP, and he has said he wanted to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Bill Clinton... repealed during the lame duck Congress at the end of his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Those are positions hugely more progressive than Hillary Clinton's. And people say, well, you can't trust him. You can't trust anything he says. He says the opposite the next day. And say, well, do you want to trust her? She, of the 30,000 missing emails, the $250,000 Wall Street speeches.
Mm-hmm. And the humanitarian intervention, which
the humanitarian interventions. Yes, I mean, it's very likely that she will make Samantha Power her Secretary of State.
Yeah, by the way.
That's a typical progression that officials make from... UN ambassador to Secretary of State.
Yeah, and by the way, they've been allowed to get away with this thing of always saying, well, who do you want with a finger on the nuclear button? But, you know, her husband, Bill Clinton, and Obama, and George Bush, both of them, they all had this ugly expression, we're not going to take the nuclear option off the table. They all say that, which is, you know, their willingness to use it is official. And so when they say, well, you can't have such people, well, absolutely, but Hillary is one who, she has said it many times, and of course she's picked out a couple of enemies, particularly Iran, and she's one of the noisiest about changing the policy to make it even more aggressive towards Iran and confrontational, in which that nasty little phrase, we're not taking nuclear weapons off the table as an option.
Well, Trump's competing with her in being bellicose towards Iran. That's pretty grim either way.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump has actually said that we can't afford these quote-unquote humanitarian wars. He hasn't gone so far as to say that they're not really humanitarian, mm-hmm. and
just can't
the
afford
R2P
them.
Responsibility to protect is an excuse to invade other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say, I don't think we can afford to be doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now,
but, I wanted to say about that, the mm-hmm. millions of dollars of millions, what am I talking about? A trillion. We're talking here about a trillion-dollar nuclear weapons upgrade to create the next generation, which is supposed to include tactical nuclear weapons, I mean, you know, usable nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I just say, we can't even talk about this. The Democratic Party, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, they're all just off the cliff. The climate's in meltdown, and they're talking about the next generation of tactical nuclear weapons and spending $1 trillion on them.
Yeah, and by the way, Jill Stein has made that point about that she says if this was coming from the Republicans, everybody would say, oh, we're completely against that. But they're delighted to endorse Obama's decision, as you say, to go spend trillions to upgrade these nuclear weapons. I mean, by the way, I can't see a better argument either for than that for the Jill Stein, because the Democrats are just all line up. Oh, it's okay. Sure, it's we can have these, and we can provoke an arms race and see what happens.
Well, I went to an interesting workshop on getting us off fossil fuel energy. It was given by my host here, who's George Ryder. He is a professor of physics at the University of Houston,
mm-hmm.
and he explained this technology that's very doable, that could replace all our energy needs. He said times 600, all of the planets, and it's this grand scheme to microwave solar energy off the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And the one problem with that was that, several problems. One is that it's such highly centralized power. The first questions you have to ask is, who's going to own and control it? Mm-hmm. And the next is, can it be weaponized? And the answer to that is yes. Mm-hmm. And so far, it's been true that if a weapon system is imaginable, it gets made.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we got the nuclear arms race.
Wow, you've written and talked about this. I think I know some have that this campaign on the environment is blocked because it's Pentagon territory. They're burning of fossil fuels and all that. There's a lot of things that you cannot, numbers and whatnot, that people cannot access or talk about.
There's some segments about this on the Real News Network. If you searched for Pentagon, carbon emissions, and mm-hmm. Real News Network, you would find these interviews in which several experts said that the carbon emissions of the Pentagon are a national security risk. Mm-hmm. They're a secret because because they would cause so much outrage that they'd be a national security risk.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, armies, you can't ask questions about armies.
It's like all the war appropriations that aren't counted.
Yes. Well, Anna, it was great you were there. I have a great quote here from a man named Martin Salinas from the convention. He said, a vote is wasted when you vote against your conscience. He must have gotten a good reception for that. We look forward to get more reports. I think that Green Party is going to have some impact in this election. I'd love to see him win the whole thing.
Okay. Like I said, you know, we got to believe until then.
Absolutely.
I mean, to put out the effort, we have to believe that something's really possible here this time.
Indeed. Well, Ann Garrison, thank you very, very much. Okay,
I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.